Good evening.
Good evening.
I am not Rick Walling. But we are going to be looking at Exodus. Let's open with prayer. Father, we thank you that we can be here tonight looking at your word. We ask that you would give us wisdom as we do so. And we ask that we would be able to apply your word to our lives. We ask this in Jesus' name, amen. Last week, Rick handed out this map, remember? Remember this map you got last week?
He said he's going to redo them in color.
Yeah, but I don't see them, do you?
No.
We're going to talk about what this map shows later on in the course, because what it shows is possible routes of the Exodus, possible places for the parting of the Red Sea, and possible locations of Mount Sinai. Those of you who were here the last time I taught will notice that there's a misstatement of fact right at the very top where it says, after 400 years of slavery, Moses leads the Israelites out of Egypt. That's a misstatement of fact, right? It wasn't 400 years of slavery. It was 400 years in Egypt. There was a period of time when, in fact, they were welcome visitors. In fact, Joseph became prime minister. So it wasn't until we reached that Pharaoh who didn't remember Joseph that the oppression started. So it wasn't 400 years of slavery, although often it's termed that way. You can see where it says Goshen, and the little squiggly lines showing the River Nile Delta there. That's the part of Egypt where the Israelites were. And then you can see a line at the top called the Northern Route. We know that the Israelites couldn't have taken the northern route because God specifically told them not to go the northern route. But in the middle, there is a line going across. It goes south a little bit from Goshen and then directly east to the top of the Gulf of Aqaba. That's the central route. And then there's a route that goes down the arm of the Red Sea and down to the bottom of the Sinai Peninsula. That's the southern route. All of these routes have been suggested by people as the routes the Israelites took. You will see around where some of those arrows converge near Succoth and some lakes. Some people think that it's one of those lakes that was divided. Others think it went down all the way to the what's called the Red Sea here, the arm, and went across across the Red Sea there. Others think Then it went that censor route all the way over to the Gulf of Aqaba, and it was that that was the Red Sea that was that parted, they went through. And then you can see at the very bottom of the Sinai Peninsula, it says on this map, Mount Sinai. That's one of the locations that people think Mount Sinai is. If you go to the right, just above the word Midian, you'll see Jabal al-Laws. That's another possible location for Mount Sinai. And if you go up the right side of the Red Sea arm, you'll see Jabal Sin Bishr. That's another possible location for Mount Sinai. Well, I don't know if that kind of detail interests you or not, but if it does, I've put up a website there, www.biblearchaeology.org, that has articles discussing these things, and they publish a magazine called Bible and Spade, which has articles on these kind of issues. I picked this one out. This one's from the summer of 2015, but I picked it out because it says, where is Mount Sinai? And Yahweh in Egyptian hieroglyphics. It's really fascinating. Any questions? Yes, Alex. Right. If you took those ages, I put the ages of the reigns of those and which one was supposedly the one did not remember who Joseph was. If you took that and then went back up to the first one when Joseph was, then that would give you an idea of the number of years that was not slavery. And for after that, it was slavery. From time of that Pharaoh who did not know Joseph to the Exodus would be the time they were in slavery. I did not bring that map with me, and I don't have those memorized. Right. Yes.
They spent 40 years walking around the Sinai Peninsula. They walk around in circles wherever they ultra slow moving.
If
people lose confidence in the people who were telling them how to go.
If you look at the where it says Amalek and Kadesh Barnea. See on that map where it says Amalek and Kadesh Barnea?
Yeah.
It's right around in that area that they would have walked around in for 40 years, in this area right here. And then this is the way they start. Then they started from Kadesh Barnea on their way into the Promised Land. Any other questions? Okay, let's look at Exodus chapter 3, we're going to start with verse 7, because Rick ended up with verse 6. Starting with verse 7 and going down to verse 12. The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their sufferings. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians and to bring them up from the land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite and the Muscatite. Now, that's not in yours? Okay. Now behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. Furthermore, I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly, I will be with you, and this shall be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. All right. Now, notice the verbs God uses here to describe what he has done and is going to do. Look at verses 7 and 9. Now, you might have different versions that have used slightly different verbs. He says in verse 7, I have seen the affliction of my people. I have given heed to hear their cry. I am aware of their sufferings. And then going down to verse 9, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me. I have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians are oppressing them. So God is making it very clear to Moses that he is well aware of the situation. He knows what's going on. He's been watching very carefully. It's important that Moses knows that. God is telling Moses something about himself here. He's saying, I'm watching. I'm always watching. I know what's been happening. And then in verse 8, after he says what he has seen and heard, he says, So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. So first he tells Moses, I've seen, I've heard, I know the people are in trouble, and the reason I've come right now, I've come now to bring them out. I've come down to fix the situation, come down to bring them out of Egypt, and not only bring them out of Egypt, but take them to a really great place, a good and spacious place. Now, let's just back up for a minute here. It says, I'm going to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians and bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land. What is that land? Well, somebody turned to Genesis 13, 15. And we'll see the promise that God made to Abraham. Somebody have 13:15?
Yeah.
Genesis 13:15.
This is the ESV version.
That's all right. That's all right.
Okay. For all the land that you see, I will give to you and to your offspring forever. I will make your offspring as the dust of the earth, so that if one can count the dust of the earth, your offspring also will be counted.
Okay, and who's talking to Abraham there?
God.
All right. Next, Genesis 26:3. Just read out whoever has that.
Reside in this land as an alien, and I will be with you and will bless you, for to you and to your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will fulfill the oath that I swore with your father Abraham.
Okay, who's talking there? And to whom is he talking?
Isaac.
Okay. Genesis 29:13-14.
As soon as Laban heard the news about Jacob, his sister's son, he ran to meet him and embraced him and kissed him and brought him to his house. Jacob told Laban all these things, and Laban said to him, surely you are my bone and my flesh. And he stayed with him a month.
That doesn't sound right.
13:14.
January, is that Genesis 29? Got obviously have the wrong chapter there. Is it 28? Okay. I'm sorry, it was chapter 28, 13 and 14, and that's God talking to Jacob. So now we have God promising this land to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all three of them on separate occasions. And now he's making the promises. He says, I'm now going to make good on that promise to the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Any questions? Okay. Back to Exodus 3, verse 10. Therefore, God says, I've said what I saw, and now why have come down, and now it's the therefore. Therefore, Moses, I will send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. So that, remember, this is the burning bush speaking to him out of the fire. And now Moses hears this, God telling him he's been doing this, he's got this plan, and his plan is that Moses is supposed to be the one to bring the people out of Egypt. So Moses says, right on, God, I'm ready for that. All right? No. First response of Moses in verse 11. But Moses said to him, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? Who am I? Who am I? Very interesting. This whole passage is a different variations on the theme of the word, of the verb be, and Moses finding out who he is and God explaining who he is. So what's God's response? God's response to Moses' reply is found in verse 12. God said, I will be with you. That's the answer. Who am I? Moses, God says, it doesn't matter who you are. I am going to be with you. And then he says, there's going to be a sign that what I'm saying is true. And the sign is in the sign to you that it is I who have sent you is, when you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship God at this mountain. So God's saying, you don't have to worry about who you are. It's who I am that matters, and I'm going to be with you. And guess what? I'm going to bring you and all the people back to the same place where we are right now, to this mountain. Any questions? Okay, that's the first response and the reply. Let's just back up a minute and go back to that description in verse 8. The place of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite. Well, God repeats this several times. Look over on page, in this same chapter, on verse 17. So I said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite, to a land flowing with milk and honey. And then in chapter 13 of Exodus, verse 5, it shall be when the Lord brings you to the land of the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Amorite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, which he swore to your fathers to give you, a land flowing with milk and honey. Chapter 23, verse 23. For my angel will go before you and bring you in to the land of the Amorites the Hittites, the Perizzites, the Canaanites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And I will completely destroy them. In chapter 33, verse 2, I will send an angel before you, and I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. And finally, in chapter 34, verse 11, be sure to observe what I am commanding you this day. Behold, I am going to drive out the Amorite before you, and the Canaanite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite. The first mention of these is actually back in Genesis when God makes the covenant with Abraham. Genesis chapter 15. And verses 18 to 21. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I have given this land from the river of Egypt as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, the Kenite and the Kenizzite and the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Perizzite and the Rephaim and the Amorite and the Canaanite and the Girgashite and the Jebusite. God added a few names there on that original list. And then finally, in Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 1, when the Lord your God brings you into the land where you are entering to possess it, and clears away many nations before you, the Hittites and the Girgashites and the Amorites and the Canaanites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, seven nations greater and stronger than you. And when the Lord your God delivers them before you and you defeat them, then you shall utterly destroy them. So what are we to make of this? Names mostly the same in Exodus. There's a couple added in Genesis and in Deuteronomy. What does this mean? Who were these people? Any ideas? What's that? Relatives of Noah. Well, of course. We're all relatives of Noah. They were all the people in the land of Canaan. All these different people. If you know the land of Canaan, it is a land of abrupt physical changes. Heights, deserts, coastlands, lending itself to different peoples ruling themselves, not lending themselves to a united kingdom or rule. In fact, it wasn't until the Israelites came that there actually was a one group ruling the whole area. So you don't need to really get hung up on all of the ites. They're all Canaanites and those who lived in the land that God was giving the Israelites. So But what about this statement that they were supposed to go in and utterly destroy them? If we go back to Deuteronomy, chapter 9, and verse 5, here's what God says to the Israelites just before they go in to the promised land. It is not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart that you are going to possess their land, but it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God is driving them out before you in order to confirm the oath which the Lord swore to your father, to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And if we go back again to that same oath to Abraham and look at verse 16, where God has just said, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed but 400 years, but I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions. As for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried at a good old age. Then in the fourth generation, they will return here, for the iniquity of the Amorite is not yet complete. So, in those days, a generation was about 100 years. So God is saying, in 400 years, you're going to come back here, and by then, the Amorites, which is the singular name for all the people living there in Canaan, is going to be so bad that they're going to be destroyed. Yes?
My take from this is that God wanted the Jewish people to maintain their bloodline pure. He didn't want them intermarrying with his people to potentially lead them astray.
Well, that's also true. That's also true. But the fundamental reason why they were supposed to be wiped out is because they were so wicked. And if they had wiped them out, they wouldn't have had a problem with the intermarrying. But of course, we know they didn't do that, and they did intermarry, and then they had all kinds of problems. Any questions? All right. Now, what about this business of the land flowing with milk and honey? I remember when I was a kid, and I heard this expression. What do you mean, flowing with milk and honey? Isn't that going to get kind of sticky and icky? And what? What does flowing with milk and honey mean? It's repeated almost every time God talks about giving this land to them. He says it's a land flowing with milk and honey. What does it mean? What? Land of plenty. Fertile and rich. That's getting closer to it, I think. Fertile for what? What were these people? Shepherds. Sheep. It was going to be a land where they could, their herds could prosper, their flocks could prosper and give milk. But that doesn't account for the honey. What about the honey?
Honey is one of those sweet food stuffs that doesn't spoil. It's very unique.
But why wouldn't this land have it?
It had bees.
Well, it's very interesting.
Bees pollinate, right?
It's very interesting. Of course, bees have been, what do you call them, raised since long, way back in history. It's been done. But there really has been little evidence that that was done very much in Israel. We don't hear anything about beekeepers. So apparently another word, the honey is used also to describe certain kinds of sweet liquids that are made from fruits. And that can be, and that would be, there would be a land with a lot of fruit. And so they conjecture that that maybe is what is meant by flowing with milk and honey. Yeah, like nectar. Right. Okay. Any questions? All right, where were we? Okay, now we're to verse 13. Yes. Which we haven't read yet. And I better get to Exodus because I'm still in Deuteronomy. Okay, now we get Moses' second response. Then Moses said to God, "Behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, 'Sent me to you.' Now they may say to me, 'What is his name?' What shall I say to them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am." And he said, "Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, I am has sent me to you." God furthermore said to Moses, "Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my memorial name to all generations." All right. Now there's some questions that pop into your mind, right? When you see this, when Moses says, "Behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. Now they may say to me, 'What is his name?' What shall I say to them?" Well, if we look back at verse 6, God has already told him, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." Why wasn't that sufficient? "I'm the God of your father." Moses saying, "I'm the God of your father, the one your parents taught you about. I'm also the one, the God of your fathers, the patriarchs." So what is this? Didn't God already tell him who he was?
What?
Right, right. I think you're getting at it there. He's now he's saying, "Okay, Moses, all right, now you're going to go." And so I think the real question that Moses is asking and saying that the people are going to ask is not just what is your name, but how are you going to do what you're going to do, what you say is going to be done here. I mean, names meant more than just It meant who you are. Who is this person? Who is this God? And they may be thinking, well, you okay, we understand you're the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But that was a long time ago and different times. I mean, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were pretty wealthy people, right? They were pretty much peers with other important people in their time. What about the Israelites now? They're slaves. And they're slaves of the most powerful country in the world. And they've been crying out for years, and nothing's been happening. So I think there's some of that included in the question here. Who are you? Yes, Mickey. Yes, there's estimated the Egyptians had over 500 gods. And you're right. Given their circumstances, really? We're going to get out from these people? Give us some reason, some name that will help us understand who you are. I think it's what they're really asking here. And God's ready, of course. God's ready with the answer. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think that could be part of it too.
Well, it could also be not a test, but just a way that the Israelites would want to validate the veracity of Moses' claim that the God of your fathers has sent you, which implies that there's been a communication between him and God.
Yeah. Right. So God replies in verses 14 and 15. I am who I am. This is what you should say to the sons of Israel. I am has sent me to you. This is the tetragrammaton. Get tetragrammaton. That Rick has already talked about some. The Hebrew letters that we in English call Yahweh is a very strong use of the verb to be in all of its tenses. It's past, present, and future. It's always am. And that God is the one that is going to be with them. And then he furthermore says that he is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And it's forever in the past and forever in the future. This is my name forever. And this is my memorial name to all generations. So it always has been and always will be. It's kind of hard to grasp, actually. But that's what he's saying. The tense, past, present, future, always I am. This is my name forever. And this is my memorial name to all generations. And then God begins in verse 16 to talk about, to show that he actually has a plan. This is how it's going to happen. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared to me, saying, I am indeed concerned about you and what has been done to you in Egypt. So I said, I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanite and the Hittite and the Amorite and the Perizzite and the Hivite and the Jebusite, to a land flowing with milk and honey. So he actually says, this is the plan, Moses. You get there, you're supposed to gather all the elders together, tell them again my name, tell them I'm the same God as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that I'm concerned about you. Remember how he began this. He talked about how he saw the oppression. He heard their cries. So he's concerned about them. And I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanite and the Hittite. I like to say this, these words. The Amorite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, and the Muscovite. They will pay heed to what you say, and you with the elders of Israel will come to the king of Egypt, and you will say to him, the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, has met with us. So now please let us go a 3-day journey into the wilderness that we may sacrifice to the Lord our God. So he's telling them what he's supposed to ask of Pharaoh. But 19, but I know that the king of Egypt will not permit you to go, except under compulsion. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my miracles, which I shall do in the midst of it, and after that he will let you go. So God is giving Moses just the nutshell plan here. He's supposed to meet with the elders of Israel first, get them to agree that Moses is going to speak for them. Then he's going to go to Pharaoh, and he's going to ask Pharaoh to let the people go sacrifice. Pharaoh's not going to let them, and they're going to have the plagues. And then he's going to let them go. And then I will grant the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and that shall be that when you go, you will not go empty-handed, But every woman shall ask of her neighbor, and the woman who lives in her house, articles of silver and articles of gold and clothing, and you will put them on your sons and daughters. Thus you will plunder the Egyptians. And we know that's what happened. It says that when they left, the people not only let them go, they gave them stuff to help them go. I mean, this has to have been something that could have been, nobody could have thought this would happen. I mean, maybe we can get out, but we're not going to get out with a whole bunch of stuff and plunder the Egyptians. But here God's telling Moses the whole plan right here, all that's going to happen until they leave. He's now given the plan. So he answers the question that Moses has, and that he knows the people are going to ask, that first of all, I'm the God who always is, and I never change, and I'm the same God as all your ancestors, plus I have a plan and I can do it, and this is what's going to happen. Your people will convince you that you can speak for them. You're going to go to Pharaoh. You're going to ask him to go out for 3 days. He's going to say no. Then I'm going to show my miracles, which turn out to be the 10 plagues. And he lets them go. And not only does he let them go, but they carry off a whole bunch of stuff. Any questions, comments?
I'm thinking after the 10 plagues, the Egyptians saw the incredible power of the God of the Israelites that were there, and they might have been at wit's end to say, well, I'm willing to do anything to get rid of these people. And gold and silver will help them. Let's get them out of here if we want to survive. You know, what's going to come next?
Right. Well, of course, the plagues got increasingly severe, and they were aimed at the very things that the Egyptians thought they could depend upon. Especially the Nile, you know, and it turns blood and dark and light, and then their firstborn son. And they, yes, what's next? They could very well say, what's next? Yeah. Anybody else?
So is that the same Pharaoh?
I mean, as what?
So Moses was there, and Pharaoh was there, and he goes back when Pharaoh...
Oh, no, this is not the same Pharaoh.
How many?
Is who could put?
Like
did the dynasty end?
Yeah.
No, the dynasty didn't end.
But the Pharaoh that was there when he killed the Egyptian, when Moses killed the Egyptian.
No, he wasn't there anymore. No.
He was in the pyramid.
Yeah.
That Pharaoh was kaput.
Yeah, right. This was Amenhotep the third. Okay, any other questions, comments, suggestions?
It is a different Moses, though. I mean, you think about him killing an Egyptian, right? And then there he is talking to God, but
Well, but the big difference is that when he killed the Egyptian, I mean, we're not told anything of that story, of the circumstances of that. It might have been a perfectly justified killing. He may have rescued a person being killed by somebody. We don't know. But He didn't have any authority. The big difference now is he's got authority, big time.
And he also hid his body with the guy that he killed.
Yes.
So he knew he did something wrong.
Yeah. So. Well, certainly wouldn't have been viewed wrong as wrong by the Egyptians anyway. Yeah. But now he has goddess. He comes up with a few more excuses here. We haven't gotten through all of his excuses yet, but that continues in chapter 4. But finally God says, enough.
Yeah.
Yep.
And after wandering for all those years, being not knowing that he was primed by God for doing the job for him, but it was, he was a different person.
Yeah.
And I assume he learned a lot about God from Jethro.
I think so too, yeah.
He was a different person being prepared to
do. Yep. Yep. Anybody else? Okay, let's close the prayer. Father, we do thank you for your word. We thank you for being the God who is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And the same God who trained Moses and prepared him for his work and gave him a task to do is the same God that trains us and gives us work and a task to do. We ask that you would help us to do that. We ask these things in your son's name. Amen.